Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Gallen. Joining me right now on the phone is Nancy Warren. Now, Nancy is a board member for the Upper Peninsula Environmental Coalition, and we're going to be talking a lot about Earth Day, plus some other topics that are of interest to those that care about our environment. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, Rick.
Now, Nancy, I introduced you as a part of the Upper Peninsula Environmental Coalition, and we've had Horseshoemen, and we've talked about with folks from that organization before, but you wear many, many hats. Can you talk a little bit about the things that you do?
Oh, I've been involved in so many things, it's even hard to explain. One of my passions is wolves, and I'm the executive director of the National Wolf Watcher Coalition, but I'm also involved with Northwoods Alliance, I'm a member of Folk. I'm also a member of the Michigan Chapter Sierra Club. So if it has anything to do with wildlife or the environment, I'm usually one of the first people to have my hands raised to volunteer. So I'm a professional volunteer.
A born and raised Upper Peninsula girl?
No, I'm not. I'm actually born and raised in New York City. Oh. I didn't move to Michigan until I was a teen. Well, I was 20. A few years back at high school, but I was raised in New York where it was rare to even see a rabbit. So we had more rats and other critters.
Now, don't talk about the politicians that way.
Well, unfortunately, I saw a lot more rats than I ever saw a rabbit. But which really is how I got involved in the environmental movement. My high school was very progressive. And I got involved in the very first Earth Day in 1970, in April of 1970, along with the federal proclamation by U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson from back in Wisconsin. And we sought to make Earth Day a day of action to change behavior and provoke policy changes. And so in New York, back in the 60s, I remember sitting on the beach and watching barges go out onto the ocean full of trash that was being dumped in the ocean. I became involved a little bit with Pete Seeger. Many of your listeners might remember Pete Seeger. Well, he had the sloop, the Clearwater, and it would ride up and down the Hudson, and I went to several of his events where he was bringing awareness to the PCBs that were being dumped in the river by the General Electric plant. On the area where I lived, the bay was so polluted, it actually caught fire from the gasoline residue on top of the bay. I remember as being 8, 9 years old, going fishing with my uncle and asking why my fish smelled like gasoline. So I was aware of environmental issues and air so polluted that it was difficult to breathe in New York. And back then, many homes were heated with coal, and I remember going outside and just seeing coal ash on trees, on the few trees that we had in Brooklyn, and also on top of the cars and your porches. You had to sweep down your porch because it had coal ash on it. And this is the environment that I grew up in back in the 60s, and as I went to high school and became more aware of these issues, I was moved to wanting to change.
As a teenager, now you came to the Upper Peninsula in 1970, right? That's where you were?
1973. Okay. I came to Michigan.
All right. So when you got here, and of course you got to God's country out here where a lot of people are, very conscientious of where we live and protecting our natural resources. Was this a hard or a difficult message to bring with you and get other people involved with something like Earth Day?
I think the biggest obstacle that we ran into is that so many people who live here think this is the way it'll always be. And they don't realize how quickly it can change. It can change with legislation. We live in an area that is just beautiful as far as our environment, our wealth of wildlife, all the things we love and we take for granted. And so many people, I think, take this for granted and don't realize that we can have development, we can have mining, we can have industry and still protect the government and or still protect the environment. And, you know, I think that was probably the biggest thing that I have seen and the biggest problem I have run into, where, you know, we are surrounded here by a million acres of the Ottawa National Forest, and we can virtually go anywhere. We can hike, we can fish, we can hunt, we can do all these things on our national forest, and it can slip away. And just imagine if all this land had no trespassing signs on it. And that could happen. And so we need to fight to make sure it doesn't happen.
Let's go back to Earth Day a little bit for those that may not understand what that day is, because I think it gets mischaracterized a lot, especially when you start incorporating politics into it. Mm-hmm. You know, it should be kind of a simple concept, a day that we all stop and take note of the planet that we live on and our stewardship of it and things that we need to do to make sure that it remains a pristine bog floating through space that we pass on to our children. And yet it's, you know, some people even demonize a little bit with Earth Day, but it certainly it certainly causes more controversy than it should.
Right, exactly. Earth Day got started as a peaceful demonstration in favor of environmental reform. And so, you know, every day should be Earth Day. We shouldn't really be setting aside just one day. And we hope to bring about awareness and just do simple things. We could plant trees. Well, right now it's a little bit difficult to even find the ground, but planting trees. And everyday choices shape the world we're going to live in and the world we want to live behind. And I could just use a few examples. Bottled water. I grew up drinking water out of the tap. And our tap water is basically good. It's good. But this bottled water industry has pretty much taken over. And we use, 2 million tons of bottled waters, the plastic bottles, end up in our landfills. And one plastic bottle can take 450 years to completely break down. So, and then we have to look at how much it costs in energy to pump, process, transport, refrigerate all this bottled water. And one estimate is that we are using up 50 million barrels of oil annually just to do all these things for bottled water. And I have to honestly say, I have never purchased a bottle of water. I use reusable containers. I go into my faucet, fill it up. In fact, I'm sitting here drinking right now from my ice water. So that's just one simple thing we can do for the environment. And another study showed that 22% of the water that's tested that people are buying contain contaminants. And levels that exceeded strict state health limits. So, we don't want to be dumping these things in landfills. And as I said earlier, I sat and watched trash being dumped in the ocean on these barges from New York City. 90% of the trash that's in the ocean comes from plastic. And you may have seen it in the news where just recently a dead whale was found to have 90 pounds of trash in its stomach, much of it plastic. Mm. One of the things I also do is I do turtle surveys. I was a volunteer for over 10 seasons helping to locate wood turtle nesting beaches, and sea turtles, and even turtles in the rivers, mistake plastic for food, and so they ingest these plastic. So we need to move away from a plastic world, and just just being aware every day of the things we do. So many of the plastic items in our daily lives are used just once and then thrown away. Plastic grocery bags, plastic wrap, plastic silverware, straws, coffee cup lids. And all we need to do is become a little bit more aware and replace these items with reusable versions. You could take your own bag to the grocery store, your own silverware to the office, travel mug. You know, when we go traveling, even that, when we stop at the gas station to refill our coffee cup, we're using our own coffee cup. And those are just little things that we need to do and just be a little bit more aware. You know, when you think about all the billion of bottles that we're using in the country, you know, and how much it's the equivalent of the fuel needed to keep a million vehicles on the road for a year. You know, so when you think about that, you know, think about this plastic and where it's going. Another pet peeve of mine, recycling programs. In Houghton County, there's at least some recycling programs, but here in Onondaga County where I live, there isn't a recycling program. So all our trash ends up in a landfill. So, you know, there's a bunch of other things we can do also for our environment.
Well, it is possible to change perceptions. I can kind of, I guess, kind of attest to this, just that I remember about 25 years ago, there was a big push on reducing the number of styrofoam cups that were being used. That was kind of the, mm-hmm. you know, the ideal thing to drink a cup of coffee from, you know, kept it warm. It was easy to hold. And and so styrofoam cups were all over the place. And I think even like fast food restaurants were using styrofoam boxes to, you know, serve their burgers, sandwiches, and stuff in.
Exactly.
And there was a television campaign that ran that showed just how much of those styrofoam, you know, products ended up in landfills, how long it takes for those things to break down. Right. And then at the end of the commercial, the announcer just says, use a mug, you know, and I remember seeing that. I was like, you know, I must have been in my late teens when those came out. And, and, you know, at work we had styrofoam cups, and it was a little thing. I said, well, you know what, that makes sense to me. There's no agenda behind it. There's nothing, you know, it doesn't enter the political realm. It's just, hey, you know what, that absolutely makes sense. I can use a washable mug, take it with me to work, and not use styrofoam cups. So that was something that I was able to do.
Another movement that just got started a couple of years ago is about the microbeads that are found in so many of these plastic scrubbers and facial products and toothpaste and body washes. And these little microbeads slip through the water treatment plants, and so they end up in our lakes and our oceans and our rivers, and they sometimes can look like food to marine animals and kill the animals. And so, you know, there's been a push to boycott products that have microbeads, and some of the industries are listening. I've noticed now you're starting to see more oatmeal or salt and stuff in the products as opposed to these microbeads. Another thing is to buy in bulk. And I know my husband always gets a little, why are you buying such a big thing? You know, we'll never eat all that. Yes, we do. We do in time. But when you buy in bulk, there's less packaging. It's usually cheaper, too, to buy in bulk. But over time, you know, every time you buy a single-serve yogurt, that's more plastic, more stuff getting dumped in the landfill if you don't have a recycling project. If you get a bigger container of yogurt, it tastes just as good, but we need to put pressure on manufacturers. I don't know how many times you've opened up a box, and then when you look at it, it's only half full.
Content settled during shipping.
And if you've noticed, this is I'm going on some of my pet peeves. I remember when you'd buy a half a gallon of orange juice, and it was a half a gallon of orange juice. Now, if you look closely, most of them are 59 ounces. So they've gypped you out of orange juice. The price has gone up. The container is smaller, and you're still using just as much packaging. So, you know, watch your labels.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say just watch your labels and our own habits.
Now, with Earth Day, are there any, whether there are events or typical things that people can do, because it's a particular day, it's April 22nd. Of course, as you mentioned, it's something that we should be aware of all throughout the calendar. But on that day, what do people normally do for that day other than just a little bit of self-education?
I don't know of any rallies going on right now. I know during the first Earth Day we had marches and we had rallies. That seems to have kind of died down a little bit. I think now it's just a more of take pause and listen, and, you know, kind of like our Black Friday when people go out shopping. Just take a few breaths and think about things that you do and the impact that you're having, your habits are having on the land, and what footprint are you leaving behind. So I think it's more just a matter of self-awareness. I don't know of any events in the area here. And just try to make every day Earth Day. And there's just so many little things we can do. And I try to encourage children and the youth that way as well. We live in an area with heavy, heavy clay soils. And we need to be cognizant of erosion issues. You know, we have trails, designated trails for a reason. Venturing off trails destroys vegetation. You can introduce non-native invasive species. You can, you're creating these mud holes, especially in the spring with this spring runoff with all the snow. The snow is going to turn to mud pretty soon. And, and I'm always aware of that. In fact, I've unfortunately seen, I mentioned my turtle nesting sites, where Jeeps were going down onto the beach areas, ATVs going down into the beach areas, destroying nesting areas, just crushing eggs. I have found many crushed turtle eggs just from people going off trail and not paying attention. They think they're doing no harm without realizing the footprint that they're leaving. So there's just so many things people can do, and we can make a difference by putting pressure on manufacturers. Give your money to sustainable competitors. Let them know that you don't like the packaging. I have written to many, many companies over the years on just some of the things that they're doing. In a beautiful area.
Do you feel that people have enough power to be able to change anything? I know there's a lot of frustration with Nestle being able to, you know, being granted its ability to suck more water for its own personal use here out of the state of Michigan, despite some over 80,000 people opposing it. You know, when they ask for public comments, I don't know how much of a better answer they can get that people didn't want to have this happen, but it happens anyways.
Unfortunately, so many issues, whether it's wolves or whether or not it's the environment, it becomes political. And I think we need to pay attention to who we should continue.
Oh, I'm kind of losing you a little bit there.
Yeah. We keep state legislators. And you brought up Nestle's as a really good example. We are allowing a corporation to tap into our water. Water is a public resource, and essentially doing it free, making money off of this, and yet the people of Flint have been cut off from their free water. So we're no longer given free water, free bottled water to Flint residents, but yet we're allowing Nestles to increase the amount of water they're taking for a... knowing that it's harming the environment by the plastic and so on and so forth. And, you know, but it's because of a market. People are willing to buy this bottled water. If we weren't willing to buy the bottled water, they wouldn't have a market. So we need to pay attention to that. And we live in a beautiful area, and we need to do what we can to protect our natural resources. And, you know, there's another example. You know, so often our legislators allow these corporations to pollute our ground, pollute our water, pollute our lakes, and then it's left for taxpayers to clean up while the corporations leave and bank their profits. Look at what's happening with the stamp sands here, where, you know, who's cleaning that up? Taxpayers. The mess left behind mining, you know, taxpayers are cleaning that up. So we can have industry, we can have development, we can have mining, but we need tough regulations to ensure that they don't destroy or damage the water we drink or the air we breathe. You know, sometimes I think this is where you asked the question earlier about how it becomes, a them against us. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can have a clean environment, but we need legislators who have a backbone to make the industry pay and have them follow good regulations. We need tough regulations.
Well, in our last couple of minutes here, Nancy, since you're obviously very passionate and you're up on these issues, so for people that are, you know, maybe they want to watch what's coming down the pipeline, you know, they can't, you know, there are things that have happened in the past, they can't do a whole lot about those, but maybe they can do something about things that are about to happen. What should they watch out for?
Well, there's a bunch of things, several things. I'm sure many of our listeners are not aware that we currently have a ban on regulating the use of plastic bags. So, yes, we have Public Act 389, which was signed into law, that prohibits local governments from banning or regulating the use of plastic bags or containers. So, you know, I think we need to let our legislators know we're not happy about that. The U.S. should be a world leader in climate change. We need legislation or legislators. There's one bill currently pending, Senate Bill 652, which amends the Administrative Procedures Act, which establishes rules, an environmental rules review committee. Well, that sounds like a good idea, except that they have an 11-member, they want to establish an 11-member science committee to advise the governor on issues of affecting the protection of the environment and the management of our resources. But they're appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. And of the 11 seats, the statewide environmental organization has one seat, and the land conservation organization has a seat. But decisions are going to be made by majority of vote, not even a consensus. So when you have an issue, it's not all parties have to agree and come up with, you know, concessions, I think this or you think that. It's a majority vote. So how much of a voice on an environmental science committee does an environmental organization have? Very little. And this was a bill sponsored by Senator Casperson. And just the other day, I'm mentioning this one only because I heard an interview he gave on a radio just the other day, and he was talking about this bill, which made me go in and explore it a little further. And he says, oh, yeah, we're hearing from environmental groups. They're not happy about this. Yuck, yuck, yuck. And I'm going, wait a minute. You know, so he's promoting a bill that he knows is not good for the environment, and then jokes about environmental groups who oppose it. And, you know, that's just one bill. you know, and there are several other bills that are pending that are just as dangerous as that one. And I think we need to really pay attention to it. We have a law in the books that preempts local government from zoning ordinances prohibiting gravel pits. So you don't want a gravel pit in your backyard? That's okay. Or too bad for you, because we have a law in the books that says your local government can't zone them out. The only thing the local government can do is regulate the hours of operation and your blasting hours and your noise levels. So, you know, we have a state legislature that is stripping local government control on things and things that affect the environment, things that affect your backyard. And I think we need to have an awareness. And so I think this Earth Day, I would ask that people take a look at what they're doing of their own, but then also know what your candidate is doing. We have an election coming up in November. Pay attention to your candidate's environmental record. Is this what you want for your beautiful area? You know, do we really want, we want to be able to breathe the air, drink our water, and live in an area that people just, you know, would cry to have in their backyard.
All right. Well said, Nancy. I appreciate your time today, and I hope you enjoy your Earth Day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.